Hello, it's Richard Herring here. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. And my stand-up tour is about to begin. Can I have my ball back? First stand-up tour in 6 years. Many of you just know me from the podcast. Don't know, I've done 14 or 15 stand-up tours in my own right. I'm a brilliant stand-up comedian, and can I have my ball back? I think it's my best show ever. That's what the audiences are saying. It's about testicular cancer, but it's funny because testicles are funny even though cancer isn't. I'm really pleased with it. I'd love you to come and see it. Bring your friends. Some of the shows selling really well, some of them selling really badly. It's a traditional Richard Herring tour. But here's where I'm going to be. 2nd of May, Thursday at the Luton Hat Factory. It's a small venue, but there are still tickets left. 3rd of May, I'm at the Bury Hedge End, which is near Southampton. That's looking more full, but still some availability. 8th of May, I'm at the Leicester Square Theatre. There's about 10 tickets left for that one, though I am back at the Leicester Square Theatre in June. And then I'm at St Albans on the 9th, Gloucester on the 10th, Chorley Little Theatre on the 11th. That's sold out, but you can join the waiting list. And then the 12th of May, I'm at Glasgow. Afternoon show sold out. Evening show, extra show, put on, still with tickets. And then there's lots more. Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs. And now, enjoy whatever podcast I've given you. It's free. It's all for you. If you want to pay me back, buy a book, come and see a show. That's all I've got to say to you. Love you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, and welcome to another Rahalaspa. Yes, I'm in my dressing gown. It's the middle of the day when I'm recording this. Fuck you. It's lockdown. Yeah, my hair looks a mess. I haven't been able to go to the hairdressers. Have you been observing what's going on? Stop having a fucking go at me. Anyway, this week it's with Nish Kumar. Very exciting that this show was recorded in an actual theatre, the wonderful Clapham Grand. There was no actual audience, but there was, I mean, you know, there were an actual audience, but they weren't in the room. They were online. I think if you're watching the video, you might be able to see some of their stupid, nerdy faces. They were lovely. Thank you very much to everyone who paid to watch it live. Sorry, there were a few technical difficulties, but now you can enjoy it without those technical difficulties. Nish is too modest to tell you in this interview, but I'm going to tell you for him. On March the 19th, he has two albums dropping. Dropping means coming out. I'm surprised they're still called albums. It's a sort of mixture of the old and the new. They're called It's In Your Nature to Destroy Yourselves, Part 1 and 2. Nish is generally one of the best stand-ups working in the UK today. So I thoroughly recommend you buy those or listen to those albums. I don't even know if you have to pay or not. I expect you do. What kind of world would it be where someone just gave out loads of content for nothing? They would be insane. They'd end up sitting in an attic in a dressing gown, just talking to puppets. Talking of which, my Twitch channel continues, twitch.tv/RKHerring. Mondays, Wednesdays and Thursdays are usually nights are coming up. And you can see Rahalastapas recorded live on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. usually. We've got some great guests coming up, including Jeremy Paxman. Alice Fraser should be tonight if you're watching this live and listening to this live. And a couple of acts, Brian Reagan from America, and Mary Lynn Rackshaw, don't know how to say her second name yet, but I worked that out. She is from The Larry Sanders Show, 24, fantastic comedian and actor. And I will work out how to say her name before I meet her. That's just the kind of guy I am. If you enjoy these, please do support us by buying a badge. GoFasterStripe.com/badges. But let's sit back, relax, and enjoy Rahalastapa. Please welcome a man who's just delighted to be out of the house. It's Richard Herring. Hello! Yes! We're here, we're live. Welcome to Richard Herring's lovely South London Theatre podcast. Though I was hanging around with all these nerds, look at the state of the people who have paid to see this. And Sky Brewer is the only one who looks like a normal human being. The rest of them, I'm not even sure about Sky. They all call it Rohalastapur anyway, and they can do in the chat right now if they wish. Welcome. It's very exciting to be out in a theatre. Very exciting to be doing this live. Anything could happen. I could say bum if I wanted, and no one could stop me. Oh, that's pretty much true always. Let's see. We've got Andy McCaitches in there, of course. There's a few people. As there was a cat in earlier with Lydia. Oh, there's Lydia. There's a cat. I don't know if the cat's called Lydia, or whether the person behind the cat is called Lydia. Of course, like there's more than one person in some of these rooms, which is meaning they're getting a very cheap ticket, isn't it? Luckily, most of you are sad and alone. So, when it says 350, 400 people, it more or less is. Thanks to the loneliness and singleness of most of the people who enjoy this podcast. So thank you very much. Thanks very much for paying. And there is another one coming up after this as well. So do hang around, but not in the same room. I'll tell you about that at the end. What's going on? Oh, I don't know if you saw Wayne's World is back. Slightly terrifying advert featuring Mike Myers and Dana Carvey as Wayne and Garth. I mean, it's just imagine a man in his 50s still doing the same stuff he did in the 1990s from his own house, trying to beaming that out, and absolutely pathetic. What, they're getting paid millions of dollars? They beat me. I think there should be a horror film with Garth, though. The 50-something-year-old Garth. It's still in the same clothes and wig, but with his terrible, terrifying, wrinkly old man's face. Good luck to them. It's nice to see them back. I did my last podcast with Danny Robbins, and we talked mainly about poltergeists and ghosts back in my own home. The night that we had that conversation, I was woken up at 12:30 a.m., when my new Apple Pod that I've got in my kitchen suddenly came on its own, full blast, playing a song. I have no idea what the song was. It wasn't one of my songs or a song I'd requested, to the extent that it woke me up upstairs and I had to come down. And it was just absolutely, completely... Now that is a sophisticated ghost, to be able to say, "Hey Siri, play something that'll scare the shit out of the people in the house." So it is slightly scary. I think our poltergeist is back. And yeah, we are doing two shows in one night here today. It's never been attempted with Rohalastapur before. And something might go terribly wrong, but hopefully it should be okay. People are drinking. Let's ask. You can put your answer in the chat, or you can hold up your hands. Would you prefer to have a hand made out of ham or an armpit that dispenses sun cream? Put your hand up for ham and put your armpit up for armpit. Let's see how we go. Stuart Light was straight, and he's been thinking about it. It's mainly hands. No one's putting their armpit up. Oh, is that an armpit, Sky, or is that a hand? I can't tell. Good. My God, what is Simon George? That's a terrifying... Simon George has just paid to have a terrifying, what looks to me slightly racist puppet. I will talk to Nish Kumar about this in a second. He can tell me if it's racist or not. I'm not at liberty to say, but it looks... unless that's your face, Simon, in which case it's me who's the racist. I think you'll have a look. So it's very still if it is him. One of Danny Robbins' haunted podcasts is about a South African man living during apartheid who is haunted by a six-foot-tall gollywog that appears to him outside his bedroom. And so I'm slightly feeling that might be what's happening to me now. I don't think I deserve it. I'm a nice guy. Anyway, look, we're going to crack on because we've only got an hour. And look, Siri's come alive because I said, "Hey Siri, go away." My guest tonight is probably best known for appearing on 50 Funniest Moments of 2013. He did so well that they asked him back for the 50 Funniest Moments of 2014.
But he wasn't as good on that, so he didn't come back for the 50th funniest moments of 2015. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Nish Kumar. Michael Sheen was unavailable. Nish Kumar, he's here.
Hello.
Hooray.
Hi, Rich.
How are you doing?
How are you? Yeah, very good.
I'm great.
To see you. I'm so excited to see other human beings.
Me too. I'm even
pleased to see you, Richard. That's how bad things are.
It is bad. You used to stare at me out your back window.
Yeah, I did.
When you were throwing eggs and feces at me.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think of Simon? Simon George, bottom, second from the left there at the bottom.
Okay, first of all, I do enjoy that you've gone to my primary role, which is explaining whether things are racist to white men in
Thank
their
you.
50s. That's my primary function in life. I think Simon George, that does look like a doll from, is it from the How to Train Your Dragon franchise?
Oh,
it looks like a dragon from How to Train Your Dragon. Yes, it's nodding.
Oh, so it's not racist.
Now I get to use my new catchphrase, it's not racist, it's a dragon. And that's a new game show format that I'll be selling to any commissioners that are interested.
That's nice. I like the fact Simon is committed to this.
Yes,
he's sitting just off to the
Simon's
side.
Simon's refusing to appear himself and has instead left the dragon. And listen, lockdown has affected us in a lot of different ways. And Simon clearly has had a breakdown and thinks he's a stuffed dragon.
I mean, do you think it is a good thing to be so clearly able to see your own audience and assess?
No, I don't think it. I mean, I think it's a good. It's not a good thing for you.
No, it says
that's what I'll say.
It says a lot about. Look at their look at their bored face. A, they're not having fun, and B, they're just sitting there judging me. They dare judge. Look at that bearded guy there, George. He's on the background of Threads.
Stuart Light looks like he got some awful news half an hour before the podcast started. He looks he's just shaking his head. He's just very depressed.
They're just sad. I mean, it's a sad time, and it's lovely for you all to join us. Thank you very much.
Stuart Light's laughing now.
Stuart Light, we got one laugh, and that is better than usual.
I've had worse gigs.
You certainly have. We would almost certainly talk about one of them. So it's
I
nice.
A lot
your
last year.
Finish.
So like when so. It's weird being back here because this is the room where we were just talking about this before we started, but we did Kiri and Jade's a musical show here where they get comedians to sing songs from musicals, and we did a special episode. We did a special show around the Buffy the Vampire Slayer musical episode, and it was amazing, and it was full for two nights. And then Joss Whedon, who created Buffy, turned up.
Brilliant.
And watched. And, like, it was fucking amazing. And that was probably the last good thing that happened. But then pretty much as soon as the lockdown started, pretty much the first week of lockdown, we were supposed to do the latest series of the MASH report.
Yeah.
And so we then sort of very had to quit. Like, basically, I had to get a camera crew in my house to set up a camera, and they had to, like, disinfect outside my house and... I'll cut to the quick, Rich. My neighbours think I'm in porn. My neighbours all think that I've opened an OnlyFans account and have been making some very high-res porn because a man basically dropped camera equipment that he disinfected outside my house and then just put it in my house.
It was good, though. I mean, it was good to see. You were maybe one of the first shows that...
Yeah, we were very... I think us and Have I Got News For You were, like, right, scheduled to start the first week back.
Right.
And it was... it was exciting stuff. It was very exciting stuff. It's like, it was weird to know what time to pitch it at. And also, it required a lot of technical expertise that I still don't fucking understand. And it was really, really weird.
Well, you had quite good cameras, that's explained by them being delivered. But like, yeah, for a while, the thing I was doing from home, the snooker and stuff I was doing from home, was higher quality than anything on the BBC. Which was quite astonishing. And I didn't have that expensive a camera. We'd set up our cameras just literally the weekend before lockdown.
Yeah.
We had been planning to do it anyway, so it wasn't just like, oh, let's get it all in. And I hadn't thought we'd do as much as we did. But yeah, we thought, oh, well, let's get some decent HD cameras.
Yeah.
But like literally, and even now, a lot of my guests on this when I'm doing it via Zoom have very, very poor
camera equipment. The setups. It's the varying quality of people's technical setups is very visible. But like, we just, my producer was very very perceptive, and very early on, when Johnson gave the press conference that said, where he said, like, oh, it's going to be fine. I went to a COVID ward. I shook hands with everybody. And nothing bad has happened to me or will ever happen to me. And I see no consequences from this decision. My producer was like, we're fucked. We need to make a plan. He did not trust any of the information coming out of the government for the first week of March. And he was correct not to. He was absolutely correct to not trust any of that. Don't worry, it's going to be fine. Let's go to Cheltenham and lick horses. He didn't trust any of that shit. And so he had made quite a lot of contingencies. So I think when we started doing the show, we were like unusually well prepared.
Right.
But only because of the complete and utter lack of faith that my producer had in our Prime Minister and our government.
And you were also doing a show. I mean, the Mash Report was great. I thought it did. You did a great. Were you clean shaven for the Mash?
Yeah,
what
basically.
Happened? What happened with the?
So I had to do my own hair and makeup, and I tried to trim my beard, and I shaved the whole thing off by complete accident, and it was a fucking disaster. And so then I'd shaved a massive streak in it, and so then I was like, well, I'll probably just shave the whole thing off. And so we talked about it on the show and stuff, and then in December I was supposed to do Big Fat Quiz of the Year. And I was like, I'm surely not going to fuck up shaving my face twice. And then I ended up shaving the entire thing off. I thought it'd be funny to leave a moustache. It wasn't funny. It made me look like a sex offender. And loads of people were tweeting me afterwards being like, don't let this man near your primary school. And I was like, it's just a moustache! Not a pedo. It's not my fault.
I grew a moustache for Movember.
Yeah.
And this is part of the reason I started doing Peter Dibdin, which is my old driving instructor character, as a result, because I suddenly looked at myself, went, fuck, I just look exactly like the character I wrote when I was 25, and I'm now the right age to play it. But I kept it for a while because I suddenly started getting roles. I got acting parts. I thought, this will be good for this. There's acting parts.
You're back.
I'm back.
You're finally back because of the moustache.
Also, you don't need to do any acting if you've got a moustache.
Is that right?
The moustache just does it all for you. The moustache follows people around the room.
Oh, that explains why everyone loves There Will Be Blood. That's not Daniel Day-Lewis acting. People just love his moustache.
It's a moustache. So you don't need to... And I had big glasses and a moustache. There's nothing... You don't need to do anything.
Groucho Marx made a whole career out of just having big glasses and a moustache.
But so Quibi, you were...
And then I did did a show for Quibi for like 4 months.
Yeah.
Which Quibi was unfortunately the first app to die of coronavirus. it's never added on any of the statistics, but they should have, at the end of the statistics, they should say, and also one app bit the farm. Quibi was, it was a short form content that people had to subscribe to.
Right.
And it did not fare well. But I can't. It's weird because I can't really speak ill of it at all because ultimately, we got like 4 months of work out of it. Yeah. It was fucking amazing. And like when it all, because we were renewed and we were supposed to be finishing. We were doing a show about the American, like a UK perspective on the American election,
right.
And it was really good fun. And we were all the people I was working with were all my friends, and we were having a great time. And they extended us right up to the election. We were supposed to go to 2 weeks after the election. And then I got a text message from the head of my executive producer. We were doing weird hours because we were working with American stuff. So I actually fell asleep at like 7 o'clock in 7 p.m.
Right.
And I woke up like an hour later. And all I saw was a text message that just said, I want you to know I'm looking into this and will get back to you as soon as I have concrete answers. And I was like, well, that's not going to be good. That's not. No one looks into things because they're going too well. And that was how I found. And it got like leaked in the press that
right.
Quibi was going under. But it was, I mean, it was great. It was unbelievable.
Was it your fault that it went under, do you think? Was it down
Listen,
to you?
I don't think it's very helpful to start doling out blame, Richard. Okay? I don't think it's very helpful at all. It's like when the Titanic went down, no one was like, whose fault was this? They were just like, let's try and actually, no, they were like, whose fault? There was quite a specific inquest.
With COVID, then Boris Johnson's very much saying, now is not the time to work out what we're doing wrong. The time for that is down the line. So that's the same for you, right?
Listen, I believe that there should be a public inquiry into Quibi. I believe that. I just think that at the moment, it's a bit soon for a public inquiry. Let's give it 15, 20, 100 years.
Okay. I'm delighted it failed.
Why?
Because, not so much for you, but because...
delighted it failed.
Hold on, Ben Walker's trying to ring because I accidentally rang him. Because it was created by Jeffrey Katzenberg.
Yeah.
And he made the decision to cut the song The Love Is Gone from The Muppet Christmas Carol. And it was
right.
An incorrect decision.
Yes, I do. I did read that subsequently,
and,
yes.
And thus, I think this is payback for his poor decision. And it's interesting that the minute Quibi went down, they discovered the actual footage...
And they
of
put
that,
it,
so they're going to put it back on, in. They're going to put
right,
it back in.
Right, yeah.
And that is all I can say.
I think I thought when you said you were delighted, you had some sort of personal show business beef. But it turns out you're just angry about something that happened to a children's film 30 years ago.
It's not a children's film. It's the greatest film ever created.
I just saw it for the first time this Christmas. I'd never seen Muppet Christmas Carol.
You'd
I just
have
saw
to it watch
it
with The Love Is Gone in it, first of all, for it to make any kind of sense.
Right.
Otherwise, it's just nonsense. It's just a man talking to a load of puppets. But once The Love Is Gone is back in there...
Does that song explain why they're Muppets? Because I have to say, otherwise that film makes, or if anything, too much sense.
Yeah. It does. It explains everything. And come on. I think there should have been an Oscar for Michael Caine. It's Michael Caine's greatest performance.
It's a brilliant movie.
And there should have been an Oscar for Beaker as well. I genuinely believe
Beaker
it.
Beaker is great.
He's only got a small part, best supporting actor. But I noticed this year for the first time, just as he leaves in his scene, he goes... and it's a very well-timed...
Oh, it's a perfect movie. Like, A Muppet Christmas Carol is an absolute... I am a frequent guest on Brett Goldstein's film podcast.
Yeah.
And Brett repeatedly says there's no such thing as a perfect film apart from A Muppet Christmas Carol. And I watched it over Christmas, and I have to say, I agree.
Good.
And I think they should now veto any... adaptations of other classic novels. Or like, I really liked the David Copperfield movie.
Yeah.
Because again, I thought like, oh, you know, let's do something fun with it. You know, let's get either Muppets or brown people.
Yeah.
Those are the only times. I don't want to see another fucking Pride and Prejudice. I don't want to see another fucking Ben-Hur unless it's Muppets or brown people. If you get Muppets and brown people, immediate Oscar. That's an immediate Oscar. If you've got brown people, if Dev Patel...
What about 12 Years a Slave with the Muppets in it, with one black person and the rest of Muppets?
I'll accept that if the white people are all Muppets.
Okay.
That's the only way I think you could... That's the only way I think you could do 12 Years a Slave.
Or would it be better if the slaves were all Muppets? Would that make it more sympathetic?
I don't know that it's possible... for a Muppet 12 Years a Slave to be any more or less offensive. I feel like once you've used the phrase 12 Years a Muppet Slave, is it 12 years? 12 Muppet Years a Slave? 12 Years a Muppet Slave. I think once you've entered into that area, you may as well just go all out and make them all Muppets.
Okay.
I think that there's no value in like, oh, maybe it's less offensive if we do one of those two things.
I should add... The Muppet Christmas Carol is worse with The Love Is Gone in it.
Why is it worse?
Because it's quite boring. But you need to have it. It was still the right. He still made the wrong choice. And I hope the rest of his. I hope everything he does turns to shit in his hands.
Well, let's not go that far. I hope everything he does results in a short-term financial bump for me and then goes to shit.
I
hope to be involved. At some way that benefits me financially in all Jeffrey Katzenberg's future business endeavours, even when they go completely wrong.
So are you having some time off now, or is there more?
Oh, Richard, I am off as off can possibly be. I am off as... I woke up this morning. This is like the last 2 days I've been up at 8 a.m. both days.
Right.
Just to watch cricket. That's the only reason I'm getting up. Otherwise, I mean, it is... I'm wearing trousers.
Yeah.
Like, not jeans. I'm wearing trousers as a mark of respect.
Thank you.
For this podcast. I feel like this is a big opportunity for me because this is my third time on here. The first time you were I could feel in the subtext you were disappointed with the size of the audience I'd pulled. And then that made its way from the subtext to the text when you said, I'm disappointed with the size of the audience. Then the second time, you booked Michael Sheen and he dropped out and I was your most available guest. And so the third time, now I'm here on my own terms. People have paid.
Yep.
And also dragons have paid. And this is a big fucking opportunity for me. I really feel like if this goes well, things could start turning around
for
me.
How many of them are paid for me and how many of them are paid for you? If you paid because it's niche, could you raise your hand now for the, just as a little sample screen? Oh, there's a... Oh, yeah.
For the benefit of the people listening on the audio, all of the hands have gone up.
No, about half.
The hands have gone up. It's like Munich in the mid-30s, the hands raised.
They've paid for both, says Ben Stride Darnley. To everyone,
as long as people haven't paid despite me being here, that would be the worst thing. Andy McCaich just said he paid for Lou. Shut the fuck up, Andy McCaich.
Well, it is stupid because that's a separate payment, and it's the next one. So you're a fucking idiot.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So let's talk. We did mention that you'd had one bad gig in your life.
I've had one bad gig. Otherwise, it's been 13 years of uninterrupted success.
And this happened since
you have
last
one bad gig. And it dominates the news cycle for 24 hours.
And I want to get it back in there. I want it to feature at the Lord Taverners gig. Now, I was surprised to find out that this was an afternoon gig as I researched.
Yeah, it was an afternoon gig. Say what you will about me, but I can turn any room, Richard. I can turn any room. I can make a bear pit out of a sandbox full of puppies. Give me 10 minutes and I can turn this room into a nightmare. And there's only 6 people here and they're all being paid. Oh, I can turn it round. You fuck. I can find some way of upsetting all of you fucking camera operators. Don't worry. I know how to push Lou Sanders' buttons. Stood at the back. There she is.
Well, so it was an afternoon gig. It was for charity.
Yes. And it was an afternoon gig for charity. What could possibly go wrong?
At the Lord Taverners, and this is my favourite bit.
Okay,
I haven't seen it. I've only read transcripts.
Oh, have you only you haven't seen the footage?
I haven't watched.
Oh,
it.
You've got to see the footage, okay, Rich. It's quite spectacular.
I should have known this would happen when I. This is you. I should have known this would happen.
Now, before you read this, I will say that, shorn of its context, this presents me in quite a negative light. Okay, I just want to get that in there. Carry on.
I should have known this would happen when I agreed to do a set in front of people who colonized my ancestors. So it's okay. One man from the shouted back. That was ages ago. That's my favourite bit. That was ages ago. What about now?
That was ages ago.
That's his heckle.
I'm really pleased that... Okay, I'm not really pleased. I'm pleased that they kept the transcript of that in. Because sometimes these things happen to me. And I think people don't believe that they happen to me. And so it's good that there was, like, you know, documentary evidence. Look, the Lord's Taverners is a great charity, and they provide support. It's all done through... It's somehow affiliated to Lord's Cricket Ground, and it's very affiliated to, like, the English cricket boards and stuff. And they provide sporting equipment to kids from low-income families and disabled kids. It's a fantastic charity, and, like, I've done loads of stuff with them before. And they have this big Christmas lunch every year, and I've been to the lunch before. And so I know the crowd, you know, and it is like, it can be a little bit, you know, spicy,
yeah.
Which is ironic given I imagine most of them would consider pepper to be a bit much. But like, it's, so they asked me if I wanted to do it and I said yes. And the first couple of minutes went very well, which did not make it into any of the goddamn news reports at the time. No one talks about how much fun they were having on the Titanic before it hit the iceberg. Okay? I've seen the film. They were having fun doing Irish jigs in the basement. No one talks about that. That's not in the Celine Dion songs. And anyway, because it was going well, I thought, you know, it was like 10 days before the election in 2019. And I thought, you know, I just thought, let's bring up Brexit. And just see how it, you know, and there's a lot of, like, influence. Because also it was so weird because, like, John Bercow was there. Like, and so it was a strange old audience. And I just thought, you know, what's the harm? And also I sort of thought, you know, if you know, you may as well make jokes to these people. These are people who are, you know, powerful and influential people. Surely they won't. And it's a charity gig. Like, how upset can they get? Anyway, a man threw a bread roll at me. A man threw a bread roll at me. And the problem is, it was not accurate. And so I actually had to ask the audience, because it had, like, rolled somewhere next to me. And it was so far away from me that I had to say, did someone throw that at me? And Tim Key was there. There were other comedians there. Tim Key was there. Chris Addison was there. John Robbins was there. And we were all, Miles Jutt was there. And there was a table of them right down the front. And I said, did someone throw that bread roll at me? And I could just see Key's big moon face just looking at me, just nodding his head going, yeah, yeah, yeah. that was someone threw that. Someone threw that bread roll at you. And sort of all hell broke loose. And then a man dressed like Sergeant Pepper appeared. And he was like, listen, I've been asked to leave the stage before on many occasions, Richard. I don't mean to brag, but I'm quite bad at my job. But this time, it was the most undignified thing because he just took the microphone off me and said, now is the time for the raffle. And it was, you know, And so anyway, I sort of get off stage, and then it was like we all went out and got drunk afterwards. Like me and Key and Addison and Robbins, there were a whole bunch of us, went out and got drunk. And you know when something happens in a room, you're like, you know, they kind of have the right to boo you. Like if they've paid yeah. for it, they kind of have the right to boo. I would draw the line at throwing bread rolls, but, you know, also I would say if you're of a political persuasion that has supported a party that's resulted in massively increased food bank usage. Possibly throwing food around is not the best look. Okay. Like, the optics of that are suboptimal. But I didn't mind any of that stuff. And then when we were at the pub, somebody texted me and was like, why are you in the fucking Daily Telegraph? And someone had filmed a video of it.
Right.
And it was on the Telegraph. And then the next 24 hours was absolute chaos,
right.
Because it was like, you know, it was on all the press. My cousin in Singapore phoned my mum to tell her. That's how my mum found out. And like within 24 hours, you're like, and then as usual with these things, it's like it then spirals out of control, and then the death threats start, and suddenly you're like, and so there's a certain like level of death threat where you're just like, that's fine. There's a certain level of death threat. If you're like a like woman or a person of color or someone from the LGBTQ community, if you do anything in the public eye, there is a certain level of death threat that you have to just let slide because otherwise you would do nothing else. Otherwise your job would be comedian / death threat administrator. So there's a certain level that you just have to, like, if I may use a cricket terminology, just leave outside your off stump. Like, just let it go past. But then there's, like, a couple of points where, like, a couple of them got quite specific. And then it also, like, your kind of mental state gets quite addled, because then journalists start calling you from unknown numbers. And, like, I don't know how these fucking people get... And they weren't calling my agent. They were phoning my personal mobile phone.
Right.
And then when you ask them how they got the number, they're like, oh, you know, I just picked... And you're like, what the fuck? Who the fuck is passing around my phone number? And then... And so then there's a certain point where you're like, my agent was like, we got to speak to the police about this. So then the problem is you have to talk to a policeman who's like, so can you tell me what happened? And you're like, well, it all started with me being pelted with bread. And I don't think I've ever respected anyone more than the policeman not just immediately laughing in my fucking face. Like, the fact that he got through that meeting with a straight face blew my mind. But it's just really weird, and you sort of see how the news cycle works. And it's like, I don't have a better metaphor for it than this, but the way that these kind of culture war style things happen is that you know, they get picked up and reported by the kind of respectable end of the conservative press. And then it's like a human centipede effect where it gets, like, shat into the mouth of then the, like, talk radio people.
Yeah.
And they swallow it down and then they shit it into the mouth of... there's got to be a better metaphor than this. And then they shit it into the mouth of these sort of, like, you know, right-wing pundits that sort of do the talk show circuit. And by the process of the digestion and the shitting and the digestion of the shitting, by the end it comes out that I, like, walked on stage and was like, right, everyone who voted Brexit, up against the wall, I'm going to shoot you. And in the meantime, I will be masturbating over this picture of Lenin. While you all line up, let me sing the red flag as I massage my erect penis whilst reading extracts from Karl Marx's Capital. Whereas actually what I did was say some, like, mildly, just very mild things about Brexit. You know...
It seems a shame to kill you when you've already died as well. That doesn't seem fair. You've died on
stage. Yeah, I died on stage.
And then they're saying, now we're going to kill you as well.
They're really, like, luckily I'm a Hindu, so I believe in reincarnation. Otherwise, I don't know how I'd have psychologically processed that death. But yeah, it's just interesting to see how the cycle of outrage works and how it's kind of... And the thing is, when it's me, when it's a comedian being hit by bread, you're like, that is... If it wasn't me, I'd think it was fucking hilarious. And I do respect the number of my friends that have not laughed in my face about this whole story. And the problem is, when it's a comedian being hit by bread, it's relatively benign. Like, what it represents might be unpleasant in terms of what opinions are allowed to express. And certainly there's an edge of what opinions about a country that I was born in I am allowed to express as a brown man. There's definitely a lot of, like, unpleasant edges to all of it. But the problem is that when it's a story like comedian gets hit with bread, that's one thing. But when it's a story like lockdowns are all bullshit, and that is getting sprayed through the kind of right-wing human centipede thing, that's when it's really bad, because that's when it starts, like, killing people.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of problem we're in this country at the moment, is that there is a very, like, well-oiled machine of right-wing outrage that can culture war literally anything.
Yeah.
Like, you would think that people not dying of a disease is something that you can't have a political perspective on. Like, you would think, like, everyone is like, oh no, I like my gran. But it turns out that is naive beyond belief. But anyway, it was funny, because it was like 10 days before the election. And
yeah,
like, somehow me, a bread roll rolling near me is, like, worthy of being the number one red story on every fucking news website in the world.
Well, again, no, there's, I mean, it's interesting, because, like, when I have certain people on the podcast,
yeah,
they, and I can't see the connection between them all. I don't see colour, so I can't see. just look and go, what's the connection between Nish and Sophie Duca? Why are people so cross about them? And is it just because they're outspoken about politics? But it is the minute, you know, you don't, I mean, it often happens with female comedians as well, I have to say. But it's just like people have this knee-jerk reaction. They've decided without, you know, I had a little discussion with some people on the Instagram post saying, does anybody find Nish Kumar funny? And I'm going, you know, like for a comedian to successfully have a career, there must be somebody. I mean, not me. Not
somewhere.
Me, mate. No, I'm with you.
No, I was trying to put Michael Sheen again. I couldn't be more against this.
Somebody must, surely. And if they don't, what an amazing human being it must be to have somehow fashioned this comedy career and performed in front of paying audiences. But you know, people are, I mean, it's sort of, that's how that right-wing approach has got, that it's, they're finding other ways.
And also
on the left-wing as well, I have to say, to attack the people they want to attack without.
Yeah.
So these things are kind of coded. There's a thing in The Spectator, which I don't know if you read your reviews, and you wouldn't expect The Spectator to like you very much anyway, Nish. About the MASH report. The MASH report, which the BBC believes is a satire show, but which neutral viewers regard as a weekly political seminar that teaches liberals to avoid thinking for themselves. That's what neutrals think about it. So imagine what right-wing people are thinking about it. People are going, well, that's just a seminar to stop liberal people.
Yeah, and also, who are these neutrals? Who are these neutrals that they keep on? Like, it's like half the country has decided we are Switzerland about everything. Apparently, they're always like, "What? Where is the?" And it is really weird because you kind of go, "We just want things to be funny, but also neutral." And you're like, "Nothing is neutral, really. Like everything has a point of view about something, and neutrality is not like a great basis for comedy." You know, it's like, it's so weird. There's a really great joke in Futurama where there's like a neutral planet.
Right.
And I always think about it whenever they bring up like neutrality. And I think there's like a meteor or something coming towards the neutral planet. And one of the guys from the neutral planet says, "Tell my wife I said hello." And it always makes me laugh when I think about this. Like, but it's not neutral. They never mean neutrality. What they mean is, just say Brexit is great and just admit that white people are better. Like, why don't you just ever admit that white people are better? And it's never, the thing is, the face of white supremacy, and I've always maintained this, is the least supreme elements of the white race. If Brad Pitt came out in favor of white supremacy, you'd be like, let's have that conversation. If Brad Pitt and Amy Adams were white supremacists, I'd be like, fair. Let's have that. Well, I don't agree personally, but let's have the conversation. But it's always these like scurvy-faced motherfuckers that look like bits are falling off them when you're not looking. Like, it's all these like weird Mr. Potato, partially reassembled Mr. Potato Head dudes.
Yeah.
But I mean, listen, The Spectator is entitled to their opinion, and I'm entitled to my opinion that I wouldn't wipe my ass with The Spectator because I believe it would try and have my anus deported.
The Spectator also suggested that you want more racism because your livelihood depends on it. So if you think about it, if racism was sorted out, what would you do then, Nish?
Yeah, it's, I mean,
so you are I think you're going out fermenting racism.
Yeah, yeah.
In order that you can still work.
I have tried to, like, I'm like operating like a producer style scheme here where I'm like trying to like game the entire system. For me, someone like Martin Luther King, I'm always like, I have a dream that we will never be equal. It's amazing. Yeah, you know, it's that thing of like, what would you do what would you talk about if there wasn't racism? You're like, anything else. Any of the many things that I would like to talk about. There are so many things that I would like to talk about.
And but also, you do talk about
loads. Yeah, I know.
So it's just like just bullshit. Watching Live at the Apollo, that wasn't about...
Yeah. it is very strange because there's a lot of intellectual inconsistencies in the things that they're saying.
Yeah.
Because they're sort of saying that one element of the critique is, listen, comedians should be free to talk about anything. but these comedians shouldn't talk about that. And you kind of go, I can't believe that you guys can't see the inconsistencies in your own position. But they can. They're just, you know, it's all, unfortunately, we're in a place where the media landscape is dependent on outrage in order to generate revenue. And that's sort of, that's a problem, I think, in terms of the coverage. And we're also in a media landscape where, and if you think about, if you just think about the volumes and the way, I mean, you know, if you think about the divisions that are created politically, you're sort of talking about like The Guardian and The Independent. The BBC is kind of caught in between everything. And then the kind of other side of it is The Telegraph, The Mail, you know, The Times. If you think about it, you look at it, and if you were in favour of impartiality in the media, you would look at it and go, ah, there's a overcorrection the other way in terms of where the British press is. And I am in favour of balance in the press. I think part of the problem is at the moment we've got the balance very wrong and we're skewing hard the other way. You know, outside of The Guardian and The Independent and The Mirror, if you look at the rest of the printed press, it's definitely skewing in one direction. And we definitely saw that in terms of Brexit, and we're definitely seeing that in terms of the way the lockdown is being written about. I mean, there's been some excellent journalism actually in The Times covering, certainly in the first couple of weeks in March, covering how, you know, Johnson was missing Cobra meetings, they weren't. There's a lot of really good journalism that happened in the first couple of weeks, but it's sort of more the op-ed pages where, you know, I find no one likes lockdowns. That's what I think is mad when people are like, we're anti-lockdown. You're like, yeah, fucking everyone's anti-lockdown, mate. None of us are having a good time. I'm bored of wanking. That's how bad lockdown has got. It's, you know, no one's in favour of it, but I would rather that we all just lock down than have a bunch of people die. Like, surely that's something we would all be able to... But then you say that and you get called a cuck.
Well, it's, you know, you want something to be true enough. I mean, there's a lot of politics of sort of belief rather than of fact now.
Yeah,
sure. Again, maybe on both sides. And if you want something to be true, then you can sort of convince yourself that it must be true.
Yeah.
And no, yeah, like you say, nobody... I don't want to be in lockdown. I can think of lots of arguments why I shouldn't be in lockdown. And I'm grudgingly... I would like the old people whose lives I'm saving to say, hey, thanks for doing that. We're not going to have Brexit anymore. So as a little thank you to you. I'd like that to happen rather than them getting away all the time. But... No, I'm delighted to be saving their lives.
Yeah, you're welcome, oldies. You're welcome. Two comedians have been mildly inconvenienced. Not really financially, actually, they've both done fine out of it. But they've been mildly inconvenienced.
To be honest, I live in the countryside. It's the same. It's the same as a normal.
Are we disaster capitalists?
Yes, I think we are. Well, it's been all right for me, and that's all I can care. That's all I can. Yeah, I've done pretty well out of it. Thanks, Zoom.
Your new corporate sponsor, Zoom. Zoom. Turn your screen off when you're going for a shit. Zoom.
So let's... Look, I don't know if I've really picked this up before with any of the many alumni of Durham University.
Yes.
But your little group from Durham University seemed to have done pretty incredibly well.
There was
golden period of comedy
it's funny, there were just a lot of people seemingly at that university at the same time that all were interested in pursuing comedy careers and then have successfully managed to do it. I have no idea why that is, but you know, it's amazing. I mean
it's never happened before because all the funny people go to Oxford and Cambridge, so it's incredible that
you know what?
So many.
I consider it my greatest life achievement to finally give poor, statistically incredibly affluent kids at Durham a hope of having a career in the arts. That's my great legacy. It was just really weird because in my year group in the Durham Review, Ed Gamble and Tom Neenan were in it, and you know, then the year below us. There were two years below us that made up the sketch group Massive Dad. So that's Stevie Martin, Tessa Coates, Liz Smith. We were all just happened to be there at the same time. And
do you think? I mean, I think because the same thing happened weirdly at the period I was at.
Yeah,
university.
Because your Oxford Review is like your loads of you still like Munnery,
Armando Iannucci, Stewart, and Al Murray, Kevin Cecil, Andy Riley, who fantastic successful.
Was Sally Phillips at it around?
Sally
that
Phillips
time.
Was around. Yeah. So Dave Schneider. So there was just I think like if you suddenly have a little explosion of interest somewhere and it's the right group of people. And many more people as well, actually, to be fair. You know, I think it just everyone really focused in and we all kind of left thinking, let's give this a go.
I definitely think that I'm slightly soft selling it by saying it was just a weird coincidence because it definitely helped because, like, Ed Gamble, certainly when we were younger, like, understood, like, I wanted to do comedy, but I didn't know what that, you know, that it, to me it was like saying, I want to be a magician. Like, it didn't have any, you know, there wasn't any practical understanding of how you went about that. But certainly when I met Ed, he had already been to Edinburgh.
Right.
And so he already understood that, you know, there was the fringe and that anyone can take a show there. And then also he understood that there were, like, you know, the circuit, how the circuit works. And there are these weekend clubs that you can go and do. And, you know, he definitely meeting him helped me understand the actual practicalities. He was much more forward-thinking than the rest of us at the time in terms of the fact that he'd actually looked into how some of these things worked.
Yeah.
And, like, people got agents and that. I had no fucking clue about any of that stuff.
Yeah.
And so it definitely helped, for sure. And then, but going to Edinburgh, and that's one of the best things the university helped us do. And it's one of the reasons that, you know, it's very difficult for me to discount. I would love to mythologize myself as being this entirely self-made person, but that's absolute horseshit. And the fact that I went to university gave me the opportunity to go to Edinburgh. And when I went to Edinburgh, and the university would give us some money as well to go up there, which massively helped us. And being in Edinburgh, you suddenly are like, oh, okay, I kind of roughly see how this works. And it definitely, it massively helps to come through with people at the same time. And then when you actually start, what really helps is like having some friends who are doing it at the same time, just so that you can all reflect on like what you're doing and how you're doing. And having contemporaries who are going through the same things as you at the same time is really helpful. And really, it was an invaluable thing for me.
Yeah. And I think people think that, you know, people think that happens a lot from universities, but I don't think the student comedy, every now and again it'll flourish and create something, but there's a lot, certainly in Oxford, everyone goes, oh, everyone just gets on TV.
Yeah.
There was probably 20 years between the last successful thing from Oxford and sort of the growth of all the people who came out of it at my time.
Yeah, so, absolutely. And even now the assumption was that if you had a successful enough Edinburgh, you would just get a TV show. But even that's completely changed.
Yeah.
And that's gone completely out of the water. And there was a time where winning something like winning the award at Edinburgh would like automatically give you a TV show. And even that now doesn't exist in the same way.
Yeah.
And everything's definitely changing. And so, but the most important thing, I think, is like having the support of people that have known you for a long time.
Yeah.
And also stops you from becoming a dickhead. I think it's definitely stopped me.
But I guess also if there's a few groups and there's a little bit of competition in it and you see someone do well and that spurs you on to do something.
Yeah, I think probably we don't talk enough about the helpfulness of competition, because I think it's more interesting and it is also in some ways more important to talk about the sort of toxicity of competitiveness. Because I've always thought the healthiest way to frame it is that you always want to keep pace with your friends.
Yeah.
I think when things get unhealthy is when you think I have to beat them or I have to be ahead of them or I have to win in some way.
Yeah.
But for me, the challenge and the way that it helped me out was always trying to keep pace with my friends.
Yeah. Also, if they become much more successful, you know, it's really annoying. Like Armando Iannucci's done, David Copperfield, Peter Bainham's, Borat, Stuart Lee's doing all right in the Alma. Fucking hell. I'm doing this. There's no one in the theatre. Doing this to the next guest. Right, we've still got a bit of time. I wanted to address this with you. Your Wikipedia entry does not know how old you are or what your birthday is. Like, you're from medieval times or something. Like, someone like medieval monk, it would go, born in, you know, 207 or 208, we're not sure. Your Wikipedia page doesn't know what year you were born in. It says, born 85 or 86.
It's really funny. I've seen it. There was also a period afterwards after Breadgate, as yes. I'm now referring to it, where my Wikipedia page temporarily had a controversy section. Right. And if you're a male comedian and your Wikipedia page has a controversy section, let's face it, it's normally one thing that you've controversied. And I thought it was very funny that for me, the closest I get to controversy is having one bread roll thrown near me at a charity luncheon. Yeah, I don't know why that is. That
Do you
it
want
says
to clarify when you were born?
No, I refuse to. It's also, what's weird is that if you Google me, you can see my full date of birth. So I don't know why. What I will say is my Wikipedia page is harder to edit than most people's.
Okay.
Because it got... my Wikipedia page basically got hacked by my cousins. I've got a 14-year-old cousin and a 16-year-old cousin who live in Australia, and I love them very dearly, but they're also fucking douchebags because they found out that I had a Wikipedia page, and they found out that anyone can edit Wikipedia, and all hell broke loose. And they changed it so that it said something like, I weigh 3,000 billion tons, and every morning I stick a potato in my butt. And they said I was best known as Madam Lily, which is what they've called me Madam Lily since they were young, which is not, I assumed, as a reference to some Australian television character. And my uncle said, I just want to tell you, it's not. They just the girl just started calling me Madam Lily when she was about 6 years old, and they still call me Madam Lily now. And so it was, in the top of my Wikipedia profile, it said Nish Kumar, better known as Madam Lily. And then I talked about this on Zaltzman's podcast, on The Bugle. I mentioned this, and The Bugle's fan base... I mean, it's not unlike your fan base, Richard, in that you can't dangle the carrot of Wikipedia edits in front of these, no offence, fucking assholes. And so for like a day, my Wikipedia page was so heavily molested that it now can only be edited by Wikipedia-approved moderators, which is why I think once my date of birth just got... Once a piece of information has just snuck under there. David Trent edited my Wikipedia page years ago to say that I... So there's, like, loads of facts about my... I don't know if this is still current, but there was a period on my Wikipedia page, even, like, 6 or 7 months ago, where there was loads of, like, facts about my career, and then it just said he replaced David Trent at the Charity Chuckle in 2011 or something. And the thing is... Basically, every piece of information that was verifiable that got in under the wire before the iron curtain of Wikipedia moderation came down is now just gospel in there. And unfortunately, one of the pieces of information that didn't make the cut was the year that I was born. But I was born in 1985, if that helps
right,
anyone okay. further
it's
understand.
It's good to know that you're not like one of the obscure Caesars. Where we're not quite sure when he was born. We feel he died. In 1859, we're not sure.
Daniel Kitson is listed on Wikipedia as a known recluse, and I actually think that I have now gone one up on him by it not being clear when I was born.
But your own website is also very lazily put together. So I think, like, it's saying 2018 gigs upcoming.
I understand that what you're trying to do here is shame me, Richard, in terms of, like, my own... online app. But what this is really doing is shaming your credibility as a, and I'm using this term incorrectly, journalist. What you're basically saying is, I Googled you half an hour before the show and got fucking nothing out of it.
I printed it up. That's very unusual. I printed up information about you this time. I do a full 2 or 3 hours research. What I like about Wikipedia is Wikipedia is used by journalists to write articles, and then you can use the article they write as verification. So, like, an article, there was someone writing about Taskmaster in New Zealand who obviously didn't know who I was, and someone is, not quite as a joke, because I am doing ventriloquism, but put Rich Herring's a comedian and ventriloquist on there, and then that New Zealand article goes, Rich Herring, the UK comedian and ventriloquist. As if that's what I'm best known for. And now I can link to that on my... And that proves that I'm a ventriloquist. You don't, if anyone links to my ventriloquism, they'll be in trouble. But it is true. So I like the fact that you can... The minute someone's written about it, you can verify it.
I'm going to start referring to you as the professional ventriloquist, Richard Herring.
Well, you know, am I professional? I haven't been paid for ventriloquism, I don't think, yet. I've been paid to play snooker against myself. So I'm a professional self-playing snooker, both by a paying audience, the BBC during lockdown. That was one of my extra gigs I got was I got paid like proper money. I could go to my wife, who for 11 years has been saying, why the fuck are you doing this waste of fucking time?
She's not wrong.
Playing yourself at snooker. And then I can go to go, oh, would you want to buy some food with this check from the BBC?
Richard, now as someone who has drawn a BBC wage on a number of different programmes, I'm sort of aware that there is a slight cash flow problem at the corporation. I don't want to guess at the size of cheque, but I'm guessing if we prorata it over 11 years, it works out to about 3p a year.
It's not the point. That's very much not the point. Right, I'll ask some emergency questions. We've done this. Oh, look at that. The time is just, it flies by.
This is what I mean.
It's nice to chat to someone in real life, isn't it? You know what I mean?
It's good to speak to someone. It's really good to speak to someone in real life.
I was saying to you, I think I am actually having more of a social life than I did before
lockdown.
Yeah,
you did say that to me. It made me worried
and
sad.
Every Wednesday I talk to someone for an hour and it's a different person. And like for a solid hour I have a chat with someone. And there's probably weeks before lockdown that I went for 3 or 4 weeks without talking to someone who wasn't my, you know, hadn't either sprung out of my loins or was quite interested in having a go on them.
is that how we're describing your wife now, Richard?
She likes having a go on my
loins. She likes having a go on your loins.
That's what they're there for.
If you guys do get divorced and I'm asked to provide a character witness, I am going to have to say he did once describe her as someone who likes having a go on my loins.
Got two kids to prove it. So as least two times.
People don't really describe them as their... You don't really ever hear loins just used colloquially. Oh, I've copped one in the loins.
She loves my loins. That's what she married me for.
I don't think it's like rappers are not going to start using my loins.
They might do. Oh, well, I'll ask you this, isn't in the book. I'll ask you this because I don't think... I've got to be careful. I've had you on twice. I could have asked you questions before, Nish.
Yeah, that's
I did have
right.
a little look to see. Have you seen a ghost since the last time you were on?
No, still no okay, ghost. Still, no. Still snake eyes on the ghost front.
Okay. If you could have one item from any art gallery or museum in the world, all the art galleries and museums in the world, so we love Nish Kumar, we're going to give him one thing
that you can keep.
Yeah, so yeah. You can take home a painting or an artifact or anything you want. What would you like from any museum or art gallery in the world?
Marcel Duchamp's urinal.
Okay.
Because I think I like it because it's also got a practical function. I can both have an objet d'art and also a urinal in my house.
Would you put it in the bathroom or would you have it in a different room so that you could save yourself a trip?
I'll be honest with you, Rich. I'm spending a lot of time in my house.
Yeah.
There's a lot of cricket on at the moment. I wouldn't mind having a fully plumbed urinal in the corner of my living room.
Okay.
I wouldn't mind that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't hate that at all.
I think as you get older, just by the bed.
Just
because I'd have to get up 2 or 3 times in the night to go for a wee. If I could just literally, like, get my loins, flop them over the
flop
edge.
Flop your loins over the edge of the bed.
Over the edge of the bed. I mean, I guess I could just get
Richard,
a bucket.
Richard, are you pissing out of your loins again? I won't be having a go on those for the next couple of weeks.
Those are my loins. Good, that's a good answer. Let's see what else we've got for you. I don't know if we've gone for it. I don't know. I can't remember, you know, because I stopped doing the very early ones. And because there's an audience of... Anne-Marie's on the fucking phone. How dare you, Anne-Marie? She's on the phone.
Oh, my God, there's a child watching.
Where?
Matthew's got a... there's a child watching. I can't believe you just talked about your fucking loins in front of a child, Richard. Oh, the kid's gone. You waved your loins at a child and now they've run away.
They won't know what loins are. They'll think they're kind of lions. Sky's dressed up as a lizard now. No, a frog. She's dressed up as...
The Loins, the Witch and the Wardrobe is a porn movie I do not want to see.
I don't know if Helen Coote knows that scary, staring man is in her room with her. Helen Coote looks very like a normal person and there's a terrifying spectral figure beside her. He seems to have horns. Oh, no, it's the thing behind
him. There was a clock behind him that made him look like he had devil horns.
Oh, sorry, mate. I'm sorry. I've embarrassed you. Good.
You know you have these emergency questions to avoid awkward pauses.
Yeah.
But you've now created more of a shuffling pause.
That's what I like. I'm going to ask. I don't know if I've asked you the very early questions.
Have I ever asked you if you'd prefer to have a hand made out of ham or an armpit that dispenses sun cream?
I don't know. No. It's hard for me to say because I've listened to this podcast for quite a long time.
And you've thought
so
about
I
the
can't remember.
To that.
I think I've probably thought about the answers quite a lot.
I've got Jeremy Paxman on in about 3 weeks' time.
Oh, really?
And I want to just, I'm going to do it quite sensibly, but then at the end ask him that and go, answer the question. And he goes, what are you talking about? Answer just, if that one just comes out of nowhere. Answer the question,
come on,
Jeremy. It's a
come
simple
on.
Question. Which is it?
Are you going to repeat the question like he did?
Just repeat. But I'll have to leave it right to the end, otherwise he'll just hang up on me. People can leave really easily.
If have I you do ever had anyone walk? No, you
no,
had
I don't think.
Walk
no,
out.
I don't think I've. No, Stephen Merchant, you know, walked off.
Stephen Merchant
at the end.
Stephen Merchant emotionally left the stage.
Stephen Merchant left. The bloke from the, what's his name?
Well, it sounds like
Ricky Wilson.
Right, okay, fine.
He was sort of on stage, but wasn't on stage.
Right. He's the man from the Kaiser Chiefs.
Was
that the problem? And my first guest is what's his fucking name? Oh, he's probably best known for he was in that band. Oh,
not sure.
Franz Ferdinand.
Yeah,
I don't know. One of them.
That's the danger. That's the danger. What is the answer? I'll practice that. What is your answer? Hand or some pretty much? It's a simple question. Stop evading the question.
I can't believe you're using me as a dry run for Paxman. Last time, I was just meat in the room replacing. Sheen. I would say I would prefer the armpit that dispenses sun cream.
Oh, interesting.
Because here's the thing, I always forget sunscreen because I have nature's sunscreen, yes. Melanin.
Yeah.
And until I went to Kenya, I didn't think it was possible for me to get sunburned. I genuinely thought it wasn't possible for me to get sunburned.
Okay.
And then I was doing the travel show that I did with Joel Dommett, and I said to him, like, it was, you know, it's the equatorial sun. Like, it's that the sun in Kenya is not fucking around. And after about like a half an hour of us being out in the sun, I said to Joel, like, I think I've got eczema. And he was like, no, that's sunburn. Like, it did make me feel, I understand now why white people are so angry.
Yeah.
It just makes a lot of sense to me. Because externally, it feels like it's all going very well for you. But when I had sunburn, I was like, get them out, send them back. So, yeah, I would like the, whereas, you know, I always have ham.
Yeah.
I always know I need ham, so I always have ham in. Yeah. So I'm never short of ham.
Whereas someone on Twitter today was discussing it, asking and said that he'd rather...
Do you feel good about your legacy, Richard?
He was saying you'd rather... I haven't asked this question for ages, that's why it's interesting it's come up again. He was saying he'd rather have the ham made of ham because he could sell that.
What?
And make money from the ham. And I just think, who would buy... Like, it's only a hand for each month, you know. Who would buy someone else's ham?
Oh,
hand?
I would definitely not buy someone's ham
but then,
hand.
But then also, then I thought, you know, when you're buying ham, it's sort of worse than someone else's ham hand, isn't it? So I guess, I wouldn't eat someone's hand made of ham. Oh, some dead flesh of a pig, yes. I don't know, yes. Can't, yeah, bring that in.
I think that if you've... I think that you lose the right if you've ever eaten a kebab.
Yeah.
If you've eaten a kebab, I'm not talking about kebabs. I'm pronouncing it incorrectly deliberately. Okay. I'm not talking about like something that's like inherited from like Middle Eastern cuisine or Turkish cuisine or even like South Asian, Indian and Pakistani kebab. I'm talking about a kebab.
Yeah.
If you've ever eaten one of those, you should eat stuff that's on the floor. Like sometimes I'm like, oh, this has fallen on the floor, and then I'll remember that I ate what's definitely a rotating skewer of ass meat, and I just was like happily wolfing that down.
Yeah,
there's no worries about it.
I really miss that. It's a nice kebab place on the Uxbridge Road, very near to where you live, I think, or where you used to. Have you moved yet?
Which one?
I can't remember what it's called. I should know, but it's about 3 or 4 years since I lived there, and that's the one thing I'd like to move back to London for.
There was one
place. The one that used to be next to Tesco's.
Shabab.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the best. Yeah, Shabab.
Oh, it's fucking amazing. I don't know if it's still open because I haven't been. I've moved, so I don't know whether it's still open. But it was absolutely incredible. And once I was doing a gig with Tim Key, and he tried to book a table at Shabab. Shabab is like, it's a kebab house with like plastic tables. The food is amazing because they bake their own naan bread. Yeah, and so the naans amazing. Were always incredible. Amazing. And the meat is delicious. It's properly delicious. But it's not, I don't even know how he thought it was possible. But he was like, I've reserved us a table online. And I was like, Shabab, how the fuck have you done that?
The first time it's ever been used. Hey, look, we're going to have to stop. We've overrun in all the excitement. It's been lovely to have you. I just want to say to you people there, thank you for being part of the show.
Yeah, thanks, everyone.
And, you know, you're all right. Most of you are all right. Do you know, crack a fucking smile, some of you. There's no problem in just looking happy.
Have you guys got the wrong URL? Were you supposed to be attending a Zoom funeral? Jesus Christ.
If you are going to come to the second show, then you have to go out of this room and come back into the other room. So don't just hang around in this one, because there's nothing else going to be in this one. If you want to come for it, if you haven't paid yet, go and pay. And you can see me talking to Lou Sanders at about 6:45. We will see. But for the now, ladies and gentlemen, give it up for the amazing Nish Kumar. Look, you can actually
thanks
applaud
very
him
much, everybody.
If you want?
Thank you very
do
much.
Do that if you didn't like. If you didn't like
lovely
him.
Lovely to see you all.
Boo.
By all means,
throw
boo.
A bread roll. Throw.
By,
a
by all means, bread roll me.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Thanks, everyone.
We're still here. Goodbye. You have been listening to Raha Last Appa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Nish Kumar. Thank you to Pest, who keep providing the music for us, even though we've asked them to stop. They just come in every week and do it. I would like to very much thank the Clapham Grand for having us along to do a couple of shows. Hopefully there'll be more in the future. Thank you to everyone who tuned in, everyone who paid money to watch these. That is incredibly useful. Helps keep us going. Helps keep the theatre going. I'm indebted to my producer, Chris Evans, not that one. I am also indebted to Kathleen McKeegan, who runs Rahalastapa.com. I think it is. She has lots of info about all of the episodes. Fantastic stuff if you want to dive deep into the world of Rahalastapa, Rahalastapa. Thank you to Ben Walker. Thank you to Acast. Thank you to Mark, British Comedy Guide. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. GoFasterStripe.com has lots of books and downloads and DVDs if you want to go old school of mine and lots of other fantastic comedians. Please support them. I'd advise becoming a member of GoFasterStripe and you get every single new thing they make, plus a choice of some of the old ones for your monthly sub. And you get a t-shirt in the end. It's good. So support Chris Evans, not that one, he's a good guy. Sorry I was in my dressing gown at the start of this episode. I'll hear on the audio you can't. Bye.
Normally being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. Do come and see me on tour. RichardHerring.com/gigs is the easiest way to find out where I'm going. And GoFasterStripe.com, you can buy books and downloads. And just tell your friends about the podcast. If you can't make it to the tour show, if you don't want to buy any products, then every time you listen to an advert, you're helping us make more podcasts with a very, very tiny micro payment. So thank you very much for that. I love you all. It's lovely to meet you on tour, by the way. Hello to everyone who said hello so far. I do come and say hello after the show if you enjoyed it, if you want to see me. That'd be nice. You can get a selfie. I don't care. I'm a selfie whore. All right, see you soon.